Let's speak to the newsletter's Sam McBride now and the political commentator Alex Keane. Sam, good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
Thanks for waiting for us, Sam. Alex, morning to you.
Morning, morning.
Good morning. Sam, where are we at? What do you make of this?
Well, it's a momentous day in store at Stormont, and we've got three pieces of business, which, you know, each of which would be very, very significant. We have the renomination call for First and Deputy First Minister Sinn Féin, making very clear last night that they will be renominating, so that's really a formal process, but not something which is going to lead to, which we'll see as the Assembly at this stage. We then have the RHI emergency legislation, which I think it's fair to say is looking increasingly unlikely to pass. There's just been a solicitor's letter issued to MLA, setting them up a legal challenge and saying that it's wholly unlawful. I think for MLAs who are perhaps wavering in this, where the SDSP and the Greens seem to have been, that might be the sort of thing that pushes them towards a more cautious approach there. And then thirdly, we've got the motion of no confidence in the Speaker, which is an absolutely extraordinary, completely unprecedented issue, really, for any legislature that I can think of, but certainly for Stormont, where Robin Newton will openly find his position challenged from really all sides of the House, I think, with the exception of his own party, the DUP.
Alex Keane, your initial feel for where we're at as a country, what we're facing here?
I think, actually, Stephen, this is an extraordinary day. We've been through this since the early 1990s with the Brooke Mayhew talks, a whole series of talks, crisis talks, summits and so on. This one, I think, is one of the most difficult we've actually faced because, A, no one expected it. No one saw this coming. B, what we thought had been a reasonably good relationship between the DUP and Sinn Féin, a relationship they boasted of, they wrote about in joint articles saying this is a really good relationship, seems to have collapsed with the Sinn Féin saying not only is it the RHI thing, but it's also because there's no respect for us, there's no parity of esteem, there's no equality, we're not returning to the status quo. And the other thing is, barring an electoral miracle, and I know we live in an age when electoral miracles seem possible, but conditions in the Brexit vote and the US vote are not what pertains in the Northern Ireland electorate, it looks like we're going to come back with more or less the same two parties in command, maybe unable to reach an agreement, and possibly either a very, very, very long period of suspension or the complete collapse of the executive. And all the times we've talked over the years, Stephen, I've said to you there'll be problems, it'll be suspended, this will happen. I don't think I've ever said the words to you, I don't think devolution will survive. But I'm getting to that stage of thinking maybe it's not possible to create the circumstances in which unionists and Republicans can jointly govern Northern Ireland.
Do you predict, Sam McBride, that if there is an election, that people will vote along similar lines?
I think it's very difficult, and particularly after the Trump and Brexit votes last year, to be in any way sure about how people are going to vote. The central issue here is going to be the people who until now have not voted. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that people who have no interest in politics are absolutely enraged by this whole RHI scandal. If those people come out to vote, who knows how they vote? And I don't think it's entirely clear that there's a single party that would necessarily attract their vote. And I think certainly the DUP and Sinn Féin seem to be setting up for a pretty traditional and pretty tribal campaign, trying not to really focus it on the RHI issue at all.
Yeah, and Sam, on the renewable heating incentive scheme, the RHI issue as you describe it, there are still fundamental questions which remain unanswered. And there is at least a danger that among all of the noise of elections and the political battles that will ensue over the days and weeks, that people may forget to keep on pursuing some of the fundamental questions which remain unanswered. One of them I referred to earlier in the show, and I'll repeat it now. Andrew McCormick, the Permanent Secretary, and Jonathan Bell in June decided that the scheme, the uncapped part of the scheme, should be closed. In other words, that cost control should be implemented as quickly as possible. And there are government documents to show that there was a date agreed of the 1st of October. Now, if you look at those government documents, the 1st of October is then scored out. I've seen them. The 1st of October is scored out and a date in November is inputted. It was during that period between October and November where there was the massive spike. Why did the delay happen? And that remains a fundamental question unanswered, Sam.
It is, and it's one of several fundamental questions. One other absolutely critical question is why the cost controls were stripped out at the very start. You heard Sammy Wilson there putting up a pretty valiant defence of his comments on Radio 4, but I think, I mean, it's very clear to anybody who's looked at the legislation that our legislation was catastrophically not the same as the QB regulations where these problems have not arisen. And who decided that? That's still not been answered. This dumping on officials may be the answer, but we still haven't heard any of those officials give their version of what happened. And I think that some people hope this would go over Christmas. They thought this would burn out. There will be public exhaustion with this. It's been quite the opposite. This is something which I think, just due to the scale of it, will not go away. And we are going to be writing and broadcasting about this for years to come. There will be court challenges. There will be all sorts of follow-up revelations. Probably now it seems a public inquiry. And I just think the scale of this is such that it just cannot be buried.
Alex, is sufficient anger around the renewable heating incentive scheme that people will...
Hello, Stephen?
Alex, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. I don't know what happened there.
Okay, sorry about that. Do you think there is sufficient anger around the RHI scheme that it may change how significant numbers of people vote?
Yes, I think there's significant anger, and I think there's also just anecdotal, just talking to people like you have done, I've done, that people do want to do something. They want to make a mark. They want to know that their anger is there. The problem is, and Sam sort of mentioned on it, I can't see how we avoid the usual old election here, Stephen, where the green and orange, and I can't see how the DUP will be quietly saying to people, you know, they may not make a big issue of it this time, but they'll be quietly saying to people, look, we made a mistake, we accept that mistake, we've handled it badly, but here's the choice you have to make at this election. Do you want us, with all our faults, back leading this country and standing up for unionism, or do you want to run the risks of someone like Carol Nicolian or Gerry Kelly or someone like that replacing Martin McGuinness as Deputy First Minister, or maybe even splitting the vote so much we'll end up with a Sinn Féin First Minister? They won't mean to. They'll pretend they're not doing it, Stephen, but that's exactly how this election will go. And people who will be rightly angry with this will still, I suspect, too many of them will probably still hold their nose and vote with the emotional side of their brain rather than with the political side.
Just finally, Sam McBride, has there been any analysis of this magic number of 30 MLAs which the parties need to activate the petitions of concern? Because, of course, if the DUP went below 30, or if that happened, they would be worried about that happening because they wouldn't be able to block some things that they've done in the past. Is that a concern for them? Is it realistic that they would go below that, or do you think they're safe?
I think that is one of the central issues in this election, and the likelihood is that even if both the DUP and to a certain extent Sinn Féin lose votes over their handling of this whole RHI nonsense, I think that there will still be a very strong likelihood that both of those parties will be at the lead of government. But this issue of 30 MLAs is absolutely critical, because if the DUP go beneath that, they no longer have a veto in the Assembly. They still have a veto at the Executive, but in terms of legislation, they no longer have a veto. Nicholas White, who did some of the number crunching for the Slug Road Tool website, had suggested that if last year's poll had been rerun with a 90 seat on offer for the Assembly, that it would have been 33 DUP MLAs. So clearly they're just above that, if you accept that analysis. A very slight hemorrhaging of the vote there could be very significant. And I think some people would then look to, for instance, would gay marriage come through the Assembly, would some changes to the abortion laws come through. I don't think it necessarily follows that that would happen, because there are other socially conservative MLAs who could sign a petition of concern on specific issues, but it would no longer be a single party which could just veto whatever it wanted in the Assembly.
And that could change fundamentally how things happen in Northern Ireland, Alex Kane, if a party didn't have the power to use a petition of concern.
Yes, I think it would. I agree with Sam in some of the issues like same-sex marriage and fetal abnormality and so on. There are a lot of Conservative MPs in the Ulster Unionist benches and in the SDLP benches. There's no guarantee that getting rid of the POC would actually, you know, move that stuff forward. But it does take power away from the DUP, because basically they've been able to protect themselves against anything by being able to wield the petition of concern without reference to anyone else. If it comes down to below 30, then if it's ever to be wielded, they will need to start talking to Jim Allister and the Ulster Unionist Party. But the other thing, I think, and it's only a gut instinct here, if the Democratic Unionist Party takes such a hit that it goes below 30 seats, I think they have a real problem then about the leadership, because that Arlene's image of 6-7 months ago as mistress of all she surveyed, of a safe pair of hands, of the right leader for the next 10 years, that would have been so damaged they would have to start considering other alternatives. And you have to bear in mind as well, Stephen, It's a DUP, and I saw this happen in the Ulster Unionist Party. Ex-MLAs who are voted out or are suddenly told they're no longer standing for election, they become angry, they become embittered. They're the ones, we've seen it with David McElseen, with Jonathan Bell, we've seen it with people who are not happy. They start briefing about what happened inside, and that can do huge damage to a party as well.
Alex Kane, Sam McBride, thank you very much indeed. Right, let's clear the decks. Let's get your calls on air. 0330 80 55 55. Lots of issues for us to discuss this morning, aren't there? And we're on air. Of course we're on air all week, Monday to Friday, 9 to half past 10. The renewable heating scheme. Do you think you've got the answers that you need? Who do you blame in terms of fixing it? Why didn't they fix it when they knew about it a year ago? The fact that they're just trying to fix it now, what does that say? 0330 80 55 55. George next. Morning, George.
Hey, good morning, Stephen. Stephen, you were talking to Sammy there, and you were wanting to know why that thing was changed that month at that big blip come.
Yep.
And Sammy told you that people had boilers installed, and they were going to lose the money if all these boilers, if they didn't extend. Well, surely that's wrong, because you don't put boilers in until you've got, you know... That's the wrong way round.
No, that's not the way this scheme worked. So the way this scheme worked was you put the boiler in and then you applied for it.
Well, that's not the way anything else happens.
That's the way it's designed. That's the way the scheme was designed.
Well, sure, that's stupid.
That's the way it was designed.
Every other thing, you have to get, you know you're going to get the money before you put the thing in. Well, that's a flaw to start with.
George, thank you. Willie, next morning. Willie?
Yeah, Stephen, I was listening to Sammy Wilson there. I actually understand what planet he's on. I mean, he's sitting and he's avoiding every question in the RHA because all he's doing, self-preservation for Arlene Foster, instead of preserving the Stormont, they're more interested in saving their own skin. And then he goes on an English radio station, they say that the one in England was done wrong. There's no handlings, there's no arguments for the one in England.
There's no half a billion pound overspend in this scheme in England. You're right. I guess the explanation that Sammy Wilson was giving this morning was that he was criticising a scheme which allowed very rich people to get some of the funding.
And Arlene Foster was the one that signed it up. Now, what I would say is this. He made another statement after it, or before, just shortly before it, about if something went wrong, everybody was looking for people's jobs. I'll get sack him, sack this one. He has to understand this. The people out there, he's accountable to me. If they can't do the job, get them out. Get somebody in who can do the job. We don't want somebody sitting in there who hasn't a clue what they're doing. And obviously the speaker hadn't a clue, because I listened to him. He hadn't a notion what he was talking about. Sammy, listen what we're telling you. If he can't do the job, get out.
Well, they would say that they're trying to do the job now and that they're trying to stem the flow of your money. They're trying to come up with a way of getting out of these commitments that they signed people up to. But my question, Willie, you heard me asking, why didn't they do this a year ago? Why are they doing it now? Why is it taking them the guts of a year to start coming up with a way of getting us out of these contractual obligations? Why did it take them a year?
Jonathan Bell said to you on the show when he was the 1st of October was a date, and Arlene Foster was on and denied it was the 1st of November. When you interviewed her, she denied there was no date the 1st of October. She sat and lied. She knew there was a date the 1st of October.
No, she would deny that she was lying, and she could say that she didn't know. I can tell you as a
she
fact.
She should know. She's a master. She should know.
I can tell you now that the 1st of October was the proposed date, and I'm banging on about this for a reason. And I want you all to hear this loud and clear. One of the fundamental questions in Northern Ireland around that RHI scheme, why did it move from the 1st of October to the middle of November? They intended to put cost controls in on the 1st of October. It then changed. If you see the government records, which I have seen, it then changed until the middle of November. During that period of the 1st of October to the middle of November, there were many, many applications. nearly half of all of the applications that came into this scheme over the totality of its length came in between the 1st of October, in other words, the date that they had initially intended to put the cost control in, and then when that cost control was moved to the middle of November, half of the total of all of the applications came in during that period. Don't get distracted by all the noise and listen to my following words. Why did that date move? John's next. Morning, John.
Hello, Stephen. Stephen, it's went beyond the RHI eating scandal. We're in election mode. And the people of Northern Ireland had a choice, have a choice. Get rid of Sinn Féin, get rid of the DUP after 10 years of their government to come to this. Vote the SDLP and officially unite in to form a new government of Northern Ireland. And what does the SDLP do? They tried, we're going back into home rule, and they want a joint sovereignty, a foreign government getting involved in the running, the daily run of Northern Ireland through the back door. That means the Fishing Unionist SDLP pact is now gone because the unionist voters won't vote for them. The SDLP, I'll give you an example, it could have been West Belfast, the Shankill ward. People from the Shankill could have voted the SDLP to get rid of Sinn Féin in that ward. They'll not do it now. So we're back to the status quo of just voting for DUP because the Fishing Unionist Party would not be strong enough to stand up against Sinn Féin in government.
Well, let's let the leader of the UUP, Mike Nesbitt, respond to that. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Stephen. Well, I believe we are strong enough. We have been working hard over the last number of years under my leadership to make sure that we are a good team. And I can admit that is something that previously, perhaps, we were not. Now, in terms of Colm Eastwood making a call in the event of collapse and all the rest of joint rule, it's just not going to happen, Stephen. So, you know, you can take a view, Colm's a nationalist, so what do you expect him to say? He's in election mode. But he knows, and I know, and I think anybody who understands politics knows, it's not going to happen.
Are you going to go into government with Sinn Féin?
Mike, you are deluded.
Sorry?
Hold on, John. Mike Nesbitt, hold on, John. Mike, are you going to go into government with Sinn Féin if you had a choice?
You know that my choice would be to work with the SDLP, but we're talking hypothetical, Stephen. What we need to have first is the election, and we have to persuade people, first of all, to come out and vote, and I think that's going to be quite a challenge. Secondly, if they do come out to vote, we have to persuade them that this isn't an orange or a green issue. This is about competence and accountability and responsible government. And if they vote on those lines, then perhaps we can be the biggest party of unionism. And it's only on that basis that we would enter any negotiations. If we're not the largest party of unionism, we will remain in opposition.
But why should people not vote along orange or green issues if they want to protect their identity?
Because it's nothing to do with orange or green. It's about £85,000 a day of their money being wasted, being literally burnt. It's about the fact that it's not the first scandal, it's simply one in a long line of
debacles. Yeah, but if people vote for this election, how people vote in this election will dictate a lot more than getting answers to the RHI saga.
It will.
It could affect their status in Northern Ireland. It could affect their identity. So actually, they may want to vote orange and green for a very good reason.
Well, Stephen, I think what has been happening, and this is my my analysis, if you go back to the very beginning, go back 19 years, the DUP and Sinn Féin basically were attacking the two parties in the castle, which were the Ulster Unionists and the SDLP, and for a variety of reasons, there was no real delivery in those early years. Now, in the last 10 years, the occupants of the castle have changed, and it's been the DUP and Sinn Féin. But once again, I think any objective analysis would say there hasn't been any real delivery. So now I think we are at a tipping point where people have to make a decision. Is it possible that a different combination, that different people in the castle can actually deliver? Because if their answer to that is no, then the likelihood is if they bother to vote, they're going to make an assumption that them and on the other side will have a big block of votes. So it's important to balance that, which means effectively you're just cancelling each other out. And that's the height of people's expectations. I'm more ambitious for Northern Ireland. I believe we can deliver. And I believe if I'm given the opportunity, the first thing I will do is sit down, not with a huge program for government that's going to solve everything, because that's never happened. But let's pick a few of the really important issues, challenging as they may be, and let's agree a way to do them and start building a momentum of delivery, which will give us the confidence to go on and will persuade the public that there's more to come.
So are you going to publish, if there is to be an election, and it's looking very, very likely, isn't it? Are you going to publish a new big idea to reduce waiting lists?
Well, Stephen, we published not only a manifesto, but I think 8 other policy documents before the election, which was only 8 months ago. So I think
so it's going to be the same ideas, is it?
If people want to know where our thinking is on those issues, you know, we will, of course, refresh it. But very, very little has changed in the last 8 months in terms of how you address the issues and the issues.
Well, very little has changed. You might just get the same result you got the last time.
That's in terms of policy, Stephen. What has changed is that not only have we had another scandal or debacle, as Arlene Foster has described, renewable heat, we have got one that people understand and about which they are angry. And we've seen in America and in the Brexit vote in June, when people are angry, they express themselves, and the expression that they come out with is, we want change. Why should Northern Ireland be any different in the face of this debacle?
Well, because they might vote, Naomi Long joining us now, they might still want to vote on their identity and policy, and that won't have changed from when they voted the last time. You're offering the same policies again, Naomi Long, as is Mike Nesbitt.
Well, we are offering people an opportunity. We always hear that people want control over what's happening. People are fed up and they're unhappy. We're offering them an opportunity to change things, and that's what elections are about. And we forget in Northern Ireland, because the narrative that people hear when they listen to you and others saying that we'd simply return the same people is that change is not possible. But Stephen, I'm an example of where change can happen, because in 2010 we saw a massive change. In fact, it was the biggest swing in the general election on that occasion, where people in East Belfast made a decision that they were going to vote differently, not just as a protest vote, but because they actually saw an alternative that was viable and an alternative that would deliver a different kind of representation. And that's what we will be offering people in this election. But we will also, Stephen, be going to them very clearly with the 5 steps that we set out ahead of the last election, and also the 5 steps which we went to the executive with when they wanted us to take the Ministry for Justice. And I want to just say what those 5 things are, because if you listen to them, Stephen, you will see that they actually address...
I will, Stephen.
But they address the core issues that have brought us to this impasse. Building an integrated society, funding services, not division, cleaning up politics, investing in skills, jobs and the economy, and ending paramilitarism. Now, if we were actually having the kind of
financial
accountability...
Every other party would offer that.
Well, they didn't, Stephen, because when we went to Sinn Féin and we went to the DUP and we gave them specifics on how we could do it, they said no. So let's not kid ourselves that every other party offers the same thing. Again, that's not the truth. We offer different things. We offered people opportunities. For example, we asked to reform the petition of concern, Stephen, that would have allowed us to show respect and dignity to everyone in society and to protect equality. Not only did the DUP refuse the opportunity, but Sinn Féin expended zero political capital in moving
Naomi,
that on. We've got to take
Naomi,
responsibility, Stephen.
Naomi and Mike, thank you very much indeed. Jack next. Morning, Jack. Very quickly, Jack.
Right, Stephen, will be as quick as I can. I wish you would take them idiots off your programme.
Well, they're not idiots, they're political representatives, and we need to respect them.
Happy days, Stephen. You'd be a better representative. We get fed up the teeth with them. And if you'd only put the whole programme on to the public and listen to what the public want, we want rid of them boys, and it's going to be the same election again. Orange and green, Stephen, let's not kid ourselves. My votes are going to Alliance this time. I'm fed up with them other boys.
Sean next. Morning, Sean.
Stephen, this legislation brought to Stormont today is a win-win for the DUP. If it is successful, you'll be able to say we've sorted out the RHI scheme. If Sinn Féin and the rest of the parties vote against it, you'll be able to say we brought a solution and it was rejected. Now, how stupid can our politicians be? They should stay away the other point is...
Okay, Sean, we're out of time, but thank you very much indeed. We're back. I'm back on air tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. You can continue the discussions on our Facebook site and indeed my Twitter feed at Stephen Nolan. Use the biggest radio show in Northern Ireland to air your views all week. Really important stuff, this.